when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Yo guys, welcome to The Last Lap. Don't forget to drop a lovely, juicy 5-star rating if you're watching an Apple Podcast or Spotify. Hope you enjoy, and let's get into it. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to The Last Lap Podcast. It's your boy, Niren. We are back, and we are here for car reveals. It's happened. It's started, lads.
Finally.
We've got Formula One content, boys and girls. I'm joined by Tomo. How are you doing, my friend?
Good, man. We've got four to talk about as well. Four of ten. So we're eating good for the first time jam was dry, man.
Yeah.
It's good to be back, and it's good to have that smooth face back on again. Look at that.
Oh, I thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Drop the skincare routine.
Oh my goodness.
Blake, how are you doing, man?
I'm great. I've crawling out of the abyss that is winter for Formula One. It's been dark.
Hibernation, man.
It's been dark, and I'm ready to see some race cars on the track. But for now, we've seen some renders, some model cars. And maybe some race cars. Yeah,
cards are being kept quite close to chest, aren't they, respective? Before we get into it, just to remind anyone who hasn't seen you on the show before, who are you and what do you do, Blake? Why are you a relevant voice in this space?
Why should we
listen to you?
Well, why should you listen to me? I would say as a failed Formula One... No, I'm just kidding. So I spent the last 10 years of my life as a Formula One engineer, and I decided to take a little detour in my career. My career's been a series of downgrades from performance engineering at the track to back to the simulator to now basically content creator. No, but it's fun. So it's an interesting space, and there's not a whole lot of voices from experience inside of the industry, and there's so many super interesting conversations to have. And I just like talking about Formula One, so here we are.
And I was quite jealous, actually, because me and you were at the Williams launch yesterday.
Yeah.
And you were there when I turned up. And the first thing you were like, oh yeah, I've already seen Alex. And he was like, what are you doing here? Because you know Alex.
Yeah.
You didn't work with Alex, but you worked with Max.
Yeah.
You worked with Daniel Kvyat. You worked with Sergio Perez as well over your time. But I saw Alex, but I didn't actually get an opportunity to meet him.
Next time we're there, I'll just bring you in. Like, this
please.
Is my best friend. In
Make
the
it really
world.
He
as well.
Absolutely loves everything about you. He knows your star sign, everything.
There's no character flaws in that man.
But I worked with him quite a bit in the simulator at Red Bull. So he's seriously got to be one of the nicest dudes in the paddock, genuinely.
And it was a great launch yesterday, which we'll get into. We want to start with Red Bull, I think. But
indeed,
there's a couple of things I want to get out there before we crack on. Mm-hmm. First of all, Nyck de Vries has been cleared of his €250,000 someone was trying to sue him, wasn't they?
Basically, he's not getting sued anymore.
Yes.
Basically, is what's going down.
That a lot better than I did.
To be honest with you, I really still don't know the ins and outs of that story.
On Better Call Saul in the future? Nyck de Vries.
Well, the judge basically said that when he did race in 2022, which as part of this deal that he'd signed, it was like if he races in F1 before 2023, he has to pay out a certain amount of money. But he filled that as a reserve driver, not as a full-time contracted driver. So the judge was like, you're fine, Nyck. So Nyck de Vries... I'm happy for you, man. I'm happy we're not going into, because that was some drama that no one wanted, especially going into his first season in F1.
Well, it was drama that the guy wanted.
Yeah.
The guy that was suing him, he did
the money as well.
He wanted that smoke.
Yeah.
He wanted the
cut of that F1 wage.
Yes.
Yeah. Payback,
he did want that.
Also, have you been unblocked by Hash yet?
Ah, Yes. Well, yeah.
Do you know the story of this place?
No, I don't.
Yeah. So
please fill me in.
Okay. So last week I told
more
the story.
Dirt.
Yes.
More dirt.
More dirt on me. again. So obviously you've had the Haas launch recently, and I was saying last week that I wouldn't be able to see it on Twitter. I wouldn't be able to see the car because I am blocked by them for comments that I made about Nikita Mazepin when he first got his drive. For him to suck his nan.
Multiple ratios.
Delivered. Multiple ratios, and the Haas admin was like, nah, this can't, you gotta can't check. Be having this anymore.
I want to know if right, you've let's been see. Up lots. Because there Ladies was a, I saw a few tweets of people being like, free Niren.
Yeah, a couple of people got involved.
All right.
Hashtag free Niren. Remember that. If I'm still blocked, then remember. Hashtag free Niren, yeah.
But people change and they learn from their mistakes.
They do.
I don't know if that's you, but
people do do that.
Are you referring to Niren or the Haas admin?
Yes.
Yes. Good answer.
Right, we've got MoneyGram Haas F1 team.
Okay. Yep. Now. Yeah. Okay, with the gold tick.
Yeah, now we're still blocked, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry to say. It's still a wrap. Lovely new header though, by the way.
Yeah.
So at least I've seen the car there.
You can see the car.
See the car.
They can't withhold everything from you as much as they try.
I genuinely thought that was going to work, you know, lads. I genuinely thought.
Hashtag free Niren.
It just means this is the next stage of hashtag free Niren, yeah?
Yeah.
I want you to graffiti it over any building you see. No, I'm kidding. Please don't do that.
No.
Please don't do that. Lads.
What about getting... some kind of American car and driving to the Haas factory and hand delivering a written apology letter. Both of you can go and you can be moral support and take them there.
Just not ready. Sorry.
It's fine. Yeah, you don't have to be. This is how you could, written apologies fine. Work
yeah,
on
exactly,
social media.
You don't have to. Yeah,
dear
just
Haas admin, I'd like to take this opportunity to apologize. For absolutely nothing.
Oh, it's the second week of that.
Yeah, exactly. I saw that with Yashu last week and I was like, it's coming.
Yeah,
it's coming.
Okay, so we're on the subject. So let's talk about Haas because that was the first livery reveal. Very to the point.
Yeah.
Renders out. Bosch on
Boom.
Time.
Here's a picture. Do
nothing
what you want
else.
With it. Yeah.
The opposite of Red Bull, which we'll get into. Yeah. Complete polar opposite.
Yeah.
What do we think of the car? Have they stolen our colour palette?
Actually, a good point. So they have watched the pod.
Yeah,
they did watch last episode.
Yeah, exactly.
They were quickly like, right, let's take this.
Just,
back.
Every time you're on screen, they just put the hand over the over your face.
I'm just a pixelated like square for them.
Get De Vries' lawyer. Get him to sort it out. He'll clear you.
True. Yeah. We'll get 50% of their earnings.
That's it.
That's how it's gonna work.
That's how it works.
All right.
So, what do we think though? What do we think of the car? Any strong opinions here?
As far as like livery launches and car reveals, I never get like super, super excited about them because you don't know what it is. It's some color. It's a canvas. It shows off.
It's some color. You're talking to a graphic designer.
I know.
How dare you?
How dare it's how, only, they're only
you?
Colors.
Engineer. Put your brain away.
Let's be honest. It was a very effective launch because it was a render.
Yep.
And hopefully they're saving all that money on what they could have had a big flashy launch event and they're dumping that straight into car development, especially if they're not on cost cap. So
it's a good point.
Smart, big brains, effective, get the car out, good reviews. I liked it.
And
it looks like a race car.
Even if they are at cost cap.
It does look like a race car.
Yeah, I'd hope so anyway.
Oh, we should.
I'd love to see a livery that makes it not look like a race car.
I was literally about to say, I think we're going to get to a point where obviously they do renders now. They don't like to give much away. We just get like basically like a rectangle. And they go, right, this is vaguely the livery.
Minecraft reveal.
Yeah, Minecraft reveal.
That would actually be sick. Imagine doing a teaser, but it's pixel. It's like pixel art of the car.
Yeah.
But it's like, that would be sick. That would be a nice way of like teasing just it like somewhat.
Minecraft reveal next,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I trust.
I think I'm warm into it now. I think it will look really good on the actual car. I mean, renders and the real thing, there is a discrepancy there. We still haven't seen, and even arguably with the Sauber release this morning, we haven't seen the actual cars. Mm-hmm. But I'm confident this will look. It looks really nice. Like from the side, a lot more black on the car.
I like it.
I guess
like
carbon.
I thought last year's was a little bit plain. It was kind of like it was their kind of brand of just being like white and red, but I like the black on there.
We giving it a out of 10. I'd say I was saying 6. Yeah, 6. I said 6.
7-ish.
Yeah.
7.
You know, I'll be the man in between 6.5.
In it.
It's 6.5. 6.4 actually is unblocked.
Oh. Admin, come on.
I'll bump it up to a 0.5.
What would you say has been the strongest Haas livery? Obviously, you've seen the Haas in person throughout the years as well. Like, which one sticks out to you?
Colors at the track. I don't see liveries. I just like race car.
You just see lines, zeros and ones.
Yeah.
Just going past.
Unfortunately, I don't have a super strong opinion. I watched the 2012 Spanish Grand Prix last week. I don't remember stuff from 11 years ago. Seriously. I was just locked in for my first 3 years staring at the screen like, have we had a fuel yet? Okay, good.
That's your job summarized.
You know what? The best Haas, yeah, I have to say it, it's the Rich Energy one. Black and gold.
Black and gold.
Like Sam Sparrow once said, I think. Was it him that made that tune? Black and gold.
Mike Snow.
Whoever made it, yeah. Whoever made that tune.
I thought you said Jack Sparrow, like from Lord...
Jack Sparrow.
Not Lord of the Rings. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. You are in howler. You're having a howler.
I don't watch movies.
Yeah, no, okay, yeah. But anyway, yeah, I thought that was obviously drama as well that came with that.
Yeah.
But for me, the black and gold...
Black and gold is strong. Mm. It is strong.
Yeah.
That so,
timeless. JP style. All right, then.
Shout out Rich Energy. No, actually, no, I don't know. Not
bad. That's better than Red Bull, my friend.
Rich War.
Right, Red Bull then. Come on then. Blake, home.
Back. The launch was really interesting because it was like 30 minutes.
Really interesting.
Yeah, it was
interesting.
Is that
the word you're choosing?
Yeah, it is this word I'm choosing. I'm sitting on the fence. No, but at the same time, it was interesting because you have this brand with a lot of other stuff going on and they did activate a lot of other stuff. It was just the fact that it took 30 minutes to get to what everybody really wanted to see. So they came in, they talked about the journey, they brought in some of the athletes, which I thought was super cool because that is Red Bull, right? And then finally we get to the drivers and the reveal, but it's Red Bull. If you expect, here's an example. Going through the Williams Museum yesterday, we were there, you look at that and there's segments of 10 years where the cars look identical in terms of their liveries. You know, technically the details change, but this is nothing new.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what a Ferrari looks like. You know what 10 years of a Williams looks like. You'd looked up and down the McLaren Boulevard.
25 years of Marlboro.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, this is not that big of a deal. Red Bull is the brand that owns the team. And if you expect them to do something super drastic, it probably reflects something that's changed within the brand.
Mm.
I don't see that anything's changed in that brand.
I just love a different shade of blue, I think.
I love the matte color or gloss colors. Pick one now.
Matte.
Both.
That's not an option.
Yeah, no. It is. Yeah, of course it's definitely an option. You graphic have a matte base and you have gloss.
Graphic designer, no. Okay, I believe you. I trust you. I personally...
But we've seen this before.
Really enjoy the matte.
Okay. The thing is, though, I would say the Red Bull pops, like when you see it on track, more than any other, because you've got that really strong contrast between the two. So, yeah, I mean, it was always wishful thinking. They are doing the fan-made liveries, aren't they?
Ooh.
There's going to be, I think, three...
Is it the US races they'll be doing?
I think it's for the US races.
Oh, wait, actually, is this a thing?
Yeah. So there's... From what I've seen, it's like the side pod and like along the nose. So I think the Red Bull is going to stay the same at the top of it, where you've got the ball.
That is fixed. Great.
That cannot be changed.
It's basically like the helmet templates, you know, where you've got fixed elements. Yeah. But then, yeah, they are going to accept designs for fan-made designs.
Oh, are you going to get involved?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to get involved.
Can you put the last lap on the side?
I'll sneak it in. I'll sneak it in.
I think the liveries and sponsorships are slightly different there.
No. We do it, right? We do it like, Alfa Romeo had a little art car.
Yeah.
And on the front wing, it said like crypto on the front. But it was kind of like a design, but it was still words.
Yeah.
We just do that.
Or just
make an art car and it's just hidden in there.
Or maybe it's like, it's on part of the car.
We say that it's because they will win when it comes to the last lap of the race. But actually, it's just...
It activates on the last lap of the race.
Yeah, no, it lights up. And
no, it's like one of them where you can only see the last lap logo from a certain angle.
Yeah.
Okay.
So like, it will just go under the radar and then there'll just be this one shot where you just be like, oh.
We do it for a night race.
He's done it.
And we make it so that's the only part that illuminates from the light.
See?
Hashtag
that's the only glossy part.
Yeah, and that comes up as well. Everyone's on the side. So you've got it sorted.
Kevin Magnussen is definitely crashing into that.
Yeah, 1,000%. That ain't less than two laps.
No. But no, it's exciting to see because Red Bull's always been a brand that's prided itself on kind of going against the grain and pushing back. And I guess in part that... Maybe there's a bit of a like the balance between that and where you've had some amazing testing liveries over the years and really pushed it out. But then in the race, it's always been this. But I also think that, you know, the Golf McLaren was so well received, for example. The white Red Bull was so well received. Unreal. I love that car. Like, I would not, I'm sure we'll be seeing some special edition, more special edition liveries, I think, across the...
Yeah.
Because it draws attention like
single
to these
event
cars.
Activations. Yeah. To bring, you know, bring
for
recognition.
Vegas, surely.
Yeah, to bring off. Recognition to specific events and everything else. Mm. But yeah.
I think brands will look at what Golf did with the Monaco one and go, yeah, that's worthwhile. Mm.
But you could like glue a diamond to the nose box.
Mm. Yeah, at Monaco specifically.
Oh, that's
really good. Yeah, and then shunt the car and some Marshall scoop.
Yeah. Jaguar one.
I wonder what actually happened then.
That got sold on the black market 20 minutes after it crashed.
Hang on. Oh, yeah. So anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, do you want to give a brief?
Yeah.
But I don't remember when it was. I just know that there was...
Yeah. I think it was like... It was on a Jaguar, I think. Or was it on a Red Bull?
Yeah, it was Jaguar.
On a
Red Bull. It was before they were Red Bull.
Okay, well, so basically for the Monaco Grand Prix, whoever, I don't know, this was a shocking idea, but they decided...
It was Ocean's 12, wasn't it, the movie?
Yeah, it was in partnership with Ocean's 12. They decided they were going to put an actual, like, proper diamond on the nose cone of the car.
Yeah.
For the entire Grand Prix, for the entire race weekend, everything. One of the set... Was it before the race, I'm pretty sure?
I don't think it
made it to the race.
No cars ever crash around Monaco, especially impacting the nose box. So that was safe.
Yeah, for sure. That was always, obviously, for me, that was always a great idea. And then whoever was driving, I think it was Christian Kleen, driving the car, binned it. The nose cone obviously came off. And a Marshall, allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah.
Allegedly.
How dare you?
Got to get that in
How
there.
Dare you?
Nabbed the diamond in front wing, and it was never seen again.
Yeah, well, it's vanished, gone. Because
because
the initial impact happened before. What's the name of the hairpin on Monaco?
Used to be Lowe's.
Lowe's.
But it's so the hotel now.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't accept it. I don't acknowledge it.
That's
it's not real.
That's where the car ended up. But actually, the incident had happened further up. So it's a mystery that has never been solved to this day. So it's interesting. But what was also quite mysterious beforehand, at least, was the decision for Red Bull to launch in New York. But I guess it all became clear. And as resident of Texas, not quite New York.
No.
But what did you make of that? And what do you make of Ford joining up with Red Bull?
The thing to me, which is not clear yet, which I think is going to be clear, is how is that partnership going to work? Because you've got Red Bull powertrains and you've got Ford coming in. Mm-hmm. How does that work in terms of manufacture? Are they, is Ford sponsorship? Is Ford electric vehicle technology, which is something they're speaking a lot about and leading heavily into is electric vehicle technology. Yep. So is this a platform for Ford to develop that and bring, you know, that high tech to the audiences and say, this is what we're doing. This is Ford now. Or is there something else? But it looks like that's probably what it is. But I don't know if they've made it clear. And if they have, I've missed it. But I think it's super cool to see Ford back in the sport. And honestly, I didn't see Ford and Red Bull happening. Mm. But because 6 months ago, we were still talking about Porsche.
Yep.
And we've been talking about that for ages as well.
Yeah,
like that was, I mean, that was just an ongoing thing forever.
Yeah,
around, you know, outside of Honda,
things move quickly, and it makes sense from Ford's point of view because you're buying into a top team.
Yep.
My understanding is, it will be a badging exercise for the engines.
Yeah.
That will commence from 2026, and not much more than that. And I guess this is because I think there is a degree of, oh well, why is it okay for Ford, but not, there's so much resistance to Cadillac Andre, but I think the main thing there is it's an extra team. Yep. This is a pre-existing team.
This is, and it's not, they're not even taking over the brand or taking over.
No.
It's more just a partnership than anything else.
So. Yeah. But it's exciting. I mean, you've got a Transit. I've had two Fiestas in my lifetime. I love a Ford.
I can't
Ford
drive, Transit. But I'm sure it's great.
Well, we'll go around in the van sometime. I'll show you the back.
Yeah.
There's a nice bed in there, man.
Yeah. Oh, okay, cool.
Camping trip.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm down.
Boy, it's been like 22 years since Ford were in the sport. They're not the most successful. I was wrong last week. They're not the most successful engine manufacturer, but that specific DFE engine is the most successful individual engine in F1 history.
Right, okay. So they've made the best engine.
Because that engine existed for like 20, 25 years or something.
So it's surpassed the Mercedes hybrid.
Yeah, because that engine's changed a lot over time. Like you've had the hybrid power unit, blah, blah, blah. Because that engine existed for so long. So there is like a pedigree there for Ford. I think I've seen the question kind of, are they, which is this just a bit of snobbery? Like, oh, Ford, they're not Porsche. They're not one of these super high. But then Honda aren't. I wouldn't say Honda are any more sporty than Ford.
No.
In my opinion.
I think Ford have a decent, you know, a solid history in motorsport as well. Across like different disciplines. You've got rallying as well. Prominent in. Yeah, I don't see a massive problem. I think it's great. We had the Stuart Ford, wasn't it, back in the day? Barrichello driving,
which is the team that is now Red Bull as well. Yeah.
Oh, all comes back
full circle.
Oh yeah, God. Yeah. Come on.
I think it's cool. I think it's cool to see more manufacturers, and also with everything, Drive to Survive, content creation, the three races in the US. It just makes sense. It just makes sense. And the only other thing that makes sense is getting Cadillac Andretti.
Yeah,
26.
Do you think that there is a genuine, being an American, like, do you feel that there's a genuine appetite for this kind of, like, for Ford coming in? Is there genuine excitement, or is it just buzzwords that, oh, Drive to Survive, big in America, American manufacturer? Is it just wishy-washy, or do you think that genuinely kind of, like, will that bring more American fans to Red Bull if Ford are attached to it, for example?
I think so, because this is something like, because all this stuff is, like, as an American, you're like, there's nothing American about it. It's, you know, it's all these other brands like Ferrari.
Haas.
Yeah.
But Haas is, it's just one of those things. It's weird. I don't, as much as they are an American team, I don't know. There's something different about that. Is the Red Bull Ford partnership more American to me? I think probably because Ford is a more commonplace household and American name. Like, ask a lot of people, ask somebody on the street, what is Haas? They probably don't know what Haas Automation is.
Yeah, yeah.
Was to ask them, what is Ford?
They probably have one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think the general public probably don't understand that, yes, Haas is an American company, but what do they do? But I guess that depends. Like, for example, NASCAR. That audience probably clearly knows what they are. Whereas the people that are, let's say, not motorsport fans coming into motorsport via Drive to Survive or some other form of content, are they familiar with that? If they're not already involved in history of racing in America, do they know Haas?
Do Haas have a presence in IndyCar at all? I don't think they do.
I think it's just NASCAR, yeah.
Because even if you're coming from a formula following in the States where IndyCar is the closest thing, you're not going to necessarily. I do find that interesting, yeah, because Haas, if anything, Haas are more Italian than anything, because they've got their engineering base in Maranello. Literally, they just took loads of Ferrari stuff, like Simone Resta and loads of other, like, went to Haas. Yeah. They've got their satellite base. And even Andretti Cadillac, they're talking about having their engineering base in the UK.
Which makes sense for all those teams.
Yeah. Because everyone, we were talking about this yesterday, so like everyone, you know people who have worked for three, four different teams. Like, everyone kind of, the total pool of people isn't that big.
No.
Like, do you think if Cadillac Andretti was to go ahead, would they be able to eventually, because they're building that big new base in Fisher in near Indiana, and it's like, do you think they would be able to get to a stage where they could actually fully be, like, everything's based out of the States? It's just about the talent, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about the talent. And honestly, like, at the end of the day, you would probably end up, you're not just going to start a brand new team with people that don't have Formula One experience from an engineering or whatever background.
And by the way, like, you came to the UK.
Yeah.
Like, you come from the States.
Yeah, I had to come here to get a job because there were no teams. I mean, there was USF1 being around, but that never made it.
Mm.
But it was like, yeah, they were building a base there. But I think, all right, you've got half the calendar in Europe.
Mm.
Those races are back to back. So if you have a team operating out of the US, I think most of these teams are going to have bases in the UK or Italy or somewhere else.
I think it's also you've got the talent being all, as I say, the talent, you've got like the people who are sort of experienced in Formula One in Europe predominantly as well, but also a lot of the calendar as well. Like, unless you've got three American Grand Prix now and then a couple more in sort of Central or South America as well. But like, the majority of the calendar is still in Europe for a lot of the season. Mm. So just logistically as well, that would be kind of maybe a little bit of a challenge too. I don't know.
Yeah, like all those, like for example, the way the Formula One calendar works as well is at those flyaway races, you have all these logistics where, you know, DHL or whoever the air freight is, there's crates showing up that go on a commercial airliner with all the cars and, you know, equipment that there's one off of, the stuff that's not sea freighted, that's coming in and out. And then you'd have to have an American team with their own logistics set for getting in and out of European races, which would be not impossible, but an interesting and expensive challenge. most of the places would have a team in the UK. And one thing I've noticed, like at teams where, for example, you're back in the day at Wind Tunnel, at Force India, the Wind Tunnel or the aerodynamic staff and the everybody else were separate factories. Mm. And that was, I don't know that it made massive problems, but it was definitely awkward when you can't sit in the same room and have a meeting. Yeah. Now we've got Zoom, Teams, and all the other stuff, which helps bring it closer because you can have a face-to-face call, which I wish people could just go back to picking up their phones and calling me. Don't call me on video. I'm turning that off. But at the same time...
I want to be in my pajamas.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm not dressed to take this call. You don't need to know that. You don't need to see that. But at the same time, yeah, I don't know. I think they would have to have a UK base or European base.
If Cadillac Andretti came calling... Blake, we're setting up in the UK. Do you want to come back?
No.
Not even for...
No. Not even a glory run for like two seasons? No.
Would anything ever convince you to go back? Do you or do you think that kind of... If, you're content with that part of your life being...
If somebody on Twitter fully does expose me for being a fraudulent engineer that doesn't know what they're talking about, I might...
From their armchair.
From their armchair. I might have to consider going back, but I'm...
Just proved them wrong.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, hi. Yeah. No, I don't have anything to prove. I don't think I'm not that interested in it right now. Like it was, you know, it's like when you do something for a long enough time, you're like, it got to the point where it was like vehicle dynamics for 8 months, track side for 6 years, then move back to the factory, not staying out at the track to be a race engineer, chief engineer. I was like, I want to go do development. Did that for six more years. And you learn that what you don't want to do anymore. And I think being a content creator with a background like that is a pretty interesting thing. And I'm nowhere close to exhausting that. And if I go back to a full-time job now, it'll be difficult to come back to this again. Like, right now is the time in terms of my life to try this. And if it gets to the point where it's like, right, we're going to have a kid or something like that, then I need to go think about that. Right now is not the time for me to be doing that because, you know, content creation is a financial risk, especially getting started. And is it going to work or not? I don't know.
But I think like the audience is ripe. Like you've grown massively since you started.
Yeah,
and
fair enough.
You've got to think like, you know, what do you think is the biggest... I don't think I've asked you this before. It's like, what's the biggest misconception you think people, general F1 fans have? Because as someone who's been on the inside for so long, and now you're on the outside and you've got the same perspective that we all have. Obviously, you've got contacts, so you've got a little bit more information. But generally speaking, you don't have like much more information than the typical fan does now.
No, exactly. The only thing I have is the experience of being there. But one thing I will say is people think that Formula One is this super refined science, right? And like they know exactly what they're doing. And that they couldn't be further from the truth. Like you've got this thing of things that you know and things that you don't know. And, you know, fans assume that teams know everything. And there's like a little sliver of stuff that's uncertainty. Realistically, the uncertainty is very high. That's why you see teams like Mercedes showing up last year, going from the fastest car outright to third place in no man's land. That is uncertainty. That's, you know, decisions. That's gut feel. And a lot of that's tools and everything else. And yes, they miss those, but teams aren't perfect.
I would strongly encourage anyone like listening and watching, if you can get, because I know some teams do like tours of the factories.
Yeah.
Like, even just going on a tour and just walking around and just seeing people who are working for, like it definitely, like I've been really fortunate. I've been able to go to a bunch of teams now and see in person and say, we're at Williams yesterday. And it's just seeing staff and personnel just going about their days and doing their, like it completely, there is definitely this myth, I feel like, this impression that even I had before I went and saw a team ruler, that they just have everything. They're on top of everything. You forget about, at the end of the day, a business, whether it's an F1 team or anything else, is just a bunch of human beings.
The human factor, factor is completely underrated.
We're flawed.
Yeah, exactly. And it's what also makes it interesting, because if you could rock up every year and the team always has the best, you wouldn't see, you know, people going from McLaren winning championships to being fourth, Williams from winning championships to, you know, sliding down to third or fourth and now all the way to the back of the grid. You wouldn't see that if there wasn't the human element in that. And I think that's what makes this pretty awesome. And at the same time, you've got huge collections of individuals. It's not, you know, it's not a team, it's a collection of individuals making this happen. And maybe you only see this or that face, but there's 400 to 900 people involved directly with that team, and then all the other people involved with making the sport happen. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is.
So mm-hmm.
let's talk Williams then.
Yeah, you two were at the launch yesterday.
Yeah, man, it's fun.
That was very
cool. How was it, first of all?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we got there. They had some food that was laid on. A lot of strawberries. I had about five. I'll when it comes to a buffet, I'll just pick. Yeah. And everyone turned up. It was mainly kind of mainstream journalists.
So it's TV, yeah. Magazines, websites, and then
us bums yeah. got invited yeah. along.
But like it was cool. It was a very interesting selection of gaming creators, Formula One creators, presenters, everything else that are not necessarily involved in the mainstream media that were extended a little invite to come yeah. share that event. And it was really cool.
And I think it's nice that teams are starting, like I know you've worked with teams as well, like
yeah.
Being more open to, you know, people who have a platform, because everyone can have a platform now with social media.
Yes.
And it's like just, you know, fans, and we've all got our own different perspectives. Like you used to work in the sport, but you're also a fan. That you cover it in your own way. We're fans in our own ways.
And yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
It's nice that the teams are starting to embrace that, I think.
Well, they're understanding that, you know, we have reach to people that them as a team and their partnerships and their brands, they're like, come join us on this journey and see what yeah. we're about. And yeah. they can reach the people that, you know, want to know what does Niren think? What does Tomo think about stuff?
Yeah, and completely different audiences as well to like the mainstream media as well. Like obviously you're going to have completely different people that that read the magazines that, you know, those certain like journalists were representing or write for. And then in comparison to like you guys or like some TikTokers that were there as well. Yeah. Yeah, you just want to kind of reach as many people as possible. So it's good that they are giving us a chance.
But yeah, they
get me.
Yeah.
He's a random.
I'll tell you what the weirdest thing for me was. The weirdest thing for me there was hearing an American accent on the stage introducing their drivers, hearing it's like, wait, it's another American in the sport, Mr. Sargent.
Yeah.
Not the only one. Yeah. Because we got kind of ushered into the room, and then they had the car draped over Alex Logan, and then they had I didn't recognize the two Williams people, actually. I think one of them was from Drillton, I think, who's one of the top dogs at Drillton. The other guy I didn't recognize, but they announced golf.
Yeah, and then the guy from golf was there.
Yeah.
That was interesting to see back on a car again.
It was. And a bit of a, again, if I did know, I probably wouldn't be allowed to say, but I don't know why golf have gone from McLaren to Williams.
Yeah. There was quite a lot of talk in sort of the build-up of things that people were saying online on Twitter, especially of like they knew that golf was kind of happening, they knew there was like a bit of a partnership there
was a leak.
Were we gonna get a golf car like delivery and like obviously Arif, who I live with, had like convinced himself, he was like, yes, it's going to be a golf car. And it's like, yeah. And I was like, okay, fair, you know, if you know more than me, bro. Yeah. And then obviously it ended up being basically the same car,
or
the same livery,
with a golf branding sticker. Prominent but not dominant.
Yes, yeah, that's good. I like the bars, that's good. Mm. Like, prominent but not dominant. Put a beat behind
write that down.
That's a
write that down.
Right.
Get that in the notes. But
copyright.
They would be silly not, because that Golf McLaren went down so well when they rolled it out in Monaco. And that was, they didn't do a Golf McLaren last year, did they?
No.
They did that in 21 and that went down so well. So it's kind of, it's those kind of things where a car is a billboard.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's what it is. That's all it, like visually, you just have to, how do you maximize the exposure of your sponsors? And by doing a one-off livery,
that's the one.
Makes sense. But yeah, it was, what did we make of it? Because obviously we got to see it in person. I thought the renders looked fantastic.
Yeah.
The renders, it definitely looked shinier. Like in real life, it was very matte.
Yeah, the floor was lots of exposed carbon, bits of the wing, but it wasn't like, you know, a lot of people are worried that we're going to end up having like, you know, really, really dark liveries because people are not painting bits because they're trying to save weight. But at the same time, I thought the renders definitely looked a lot sharper.
Yeah.
But the car looked good. Here's the thing. The Duracell roll hoop. I swore that was the first time I've ever seen that. apparently that was
Miami
several races last
year. Yeah,
I'm not
a lot of time last year.
If anybody shows me a photo of anything last year, I'm convinced it was a deep fake and I've never seen it before. It's not real.
The composition was slightly different.
Enough in the order to get
exactly.
You know what I mean?
But the idea because I think that race they had Duracell on the rear wing as well.
Okay.
Like along the, so obviously that was a one off where they decided to really push Duracell. It's like, I've definitely warmed to, because it's not that different to last year,
no.
Obviously, but there's a few slight changes. Like there's a little bit on the side pod that kind of goes up, which I quite like, and it kind of comes together. I think they've, I'm more happy that Williams have been consistent, because they've chopped and changed so often. It's like, if you want to build an identity,
you do,
like we've seen with Red Bull.
Yeah.
Yeah. You kind of do. You can evolve it
rather than like just change it. Because we did have that where obviously we had kind of like the aqua fresh Williams, where it was sort of like white, red, and blue.
Yep.
And did they change that halfway through the season?
Well, no. So you had Martini 2018. You had
blue, white, and red. Rocket. Was that for Kubica's
2019? Yeah. That was Kubica's first.
This is all blur to me.
And then there was just a white and blue one.
And then that got canned.
Safina, and that got canned. That had that was Latifi's first season, I want to say.
Yeah.
And now they've just done the dark blue.
White's gone now. Thing. It's like.
Yeah. I guess it just shows that they're like the partners that are coming to the team have quite a bit of influence, because they're able to buy the whole branding of the car.
Mm. Yeah, pretty much.
But I still find it quite interesting, because the Williams doesn't have a huge amount of sponsors on it.
No.
Still got a big empty side pod.
So this is what I was going to say. Like, realistically, if you're getting Golf as a sponsorship, like, you know, an iconic brand in the world of motorsport, and then just putting it like a circle on the
implant
on the nose. Mm. Yeah. And you've got the whole rest of the car.
Yeah.
Not really doing anything in terms of like branding.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There should have been really scope, I feel, to do a little bit more with it. But again, as you said, like, I guess keeping that consistent branding was maybe more important to them.
Yeah. And also, it kind of shows that, if you like, we want sponsors, because obviously all F1 teams want more sponsors. Yeah. It's a no-brainer. It's free money.
You see some of the cars and teams, it's just like literally logos up and down the nose. Like the Alpha looked like that. There's lots of names on it.
Yeah.
Nothing super standout getting huge chunks of real estate other than a couple, but it was like, you know, lots of stuff. But there's an interesting thing about that, about how teams get revenue from that. And it's looking at how often is the team or the car in the feed. And that's the bannering and the garages, interview spaces and everything else. Mm-hmm. But then as far as the car itself and the team kit, it's like how often they're shown on TV, which shots are most prominent and which logos get the most real estate or most airtime or most visibility. And that's another one. But Williams clearly looking like they've left. They're looking for more sponsors.
Yeah,
for sure.
Clearly. I mean, you look at Alfa Romeo, prime example. They've kind of, we've all talked about McLaren in recent years, how they've gone from pretty much like that orange car when Fernando was in it with like no sponsors.
Yeah.
Shandon, the only one I can remember.
Yeah.
And now they're just pepper sprayed with sponsors
all
everywhere.
Over the place. Yeah.
And Alfa Romeo, the same. They launched this morning, new Sauber. And it is... There are sponsors for days, mate, on that car.
All over the gaff.
Mm.
They've done well. There's
good for them.
Everywhere, yeah.
I'm sure the upcoming Audi partnerships probably helping as well.
Bolstered that. People want to get on board with that, being attached to a big OEM like Audi coming in.
Because faith For obvious reasons, I have more faith in Sauber than I do Williams right now. I think that goes without saying, right?
Yeah. In the here and the now,
yeah,
and in the future as well. Yeah, to be brutally honest. In terms
it's
of like
one of those things. It's going to take if you're struggling in terms of performance for that long, it does take a lot of time. You can't just get a new technical director and turn the team around.
No,
it's like you said, it's the human factor, and it's not just two or three people.
Did you watch the launch this morning, though?
I didn't.
I didn't.
Oh no,
I didn't.
Two words.
Okay,
Jerry Springer. Another two words, Jeremy Kyle. It literally, the way they produced it, it felt like an episode of Jeremy Kyle / Jerry, because they have the crowd all clapping and then Tom Clarkson's there and it's got the slow camera pan into him. Honestly, and they were literally like...
He was about to do a DNA test.
Yeah, like, who's the father of this child?
Valtteri, I'm sorry.
The car does not have a mullet, therefore it's not yours, Valtteri.
Oh, and what a mullet it is, honestly.
It's fully glorious.
His Australian... identity.
I like him more and more every season. It seems like now that he's outside of Mercedes,
seeing
just really express himself.
Didn't read the article, but I saw a headline that was referring actually explicitly to that. I think Valtteri's I don't have any quotes, but saying about how since he's left Mercedes, he's felt. He felt he'd become a bit of a, I think he said a bit of a robot, where he was kind of just so focused and not able to kind of express himself outside of the car, which is nice.
But they are, like, in terms of the way they present, they usually are fairly heavily PR trained in the way they do interviews.
It's funny though. It felt like an episode of Black Mirror. Like when I put it on, I was like, this is weird. Just the way that they've shot.
I need to go back and watch that.
The alpha reveal.
Alpha
reveal. Yeah,
I'm gonna go watch it when I get home.
It's jokes, and obviously, especially where you got Andreas there, and you've got the what's his name? Who's the guy acting team principal? Can't remember his name. He's got three names. With their black turtlenecks coming in, sharp. Yeah. And I was like, well,
he was very gloom and doom. It was like you asked a question, like, "How's it going?" And he's like, "It's not terrible." You know, it's like it's negative stuff, and it's like it was really gloom. And I did catch a few minutes of it, and it was kind of gloom and doom, but then it's positive. I was like,
can't say it's disastrous yet. Yeah.
But I guess weird. When you've got the more sponsors you've got and the more high profile you get, I guess we see that with Red Bull, right? Yeah, you have to be more toe the line and be more kind of, you know, you can't inject quite as much. What's the word I'm looking for? Kind of spontaneity. You know? You know what I mean?
Nah, man.
You've got all these sponsors who don't want to upset any of them, so we have to be like very...
But they didn't really... I don't know. There wasn't very many questions. It was like general things like, how's the car? And it's like, it was like setting the tone that it could be bad, but maybe we've worked hard enough and it could be good. I literally turned it on someone's stream and I saw it for like 2 minutes and the dude was talking. I was like...
Oh, and they leaked their own livery as well.
On the backdrop.
Yeah. Watching the video, right?
They haven't revealed the car.
There's no official imagery anywhere, right? And then all of a sudden it cuts to like they're chatting and you could just see on the screen in the background the render. And I'm like, on my stream, I was like, wait, they've just shown the car. And I just pause it, go back and like enlarge it and you just see this pixelated version of the...
Yeah.
Expanded
enhanced.
In hand.
Yeah.
But I was like, what are you doing? I feel that must have been a mistake, surely. I don't know. That didn't seem very...
That's either a mistake or just terrible planning.
Arif was having the same issue on his stream as well.
That feels like bad planning, yeah.
Yeah, I watched his after.
That feels like bad planning rather than like, we did that by accident. They were just like, they just didn't think, we probably should
have the car. It was an odd one. I think Williams have had the best announcement, I think, the way it's gone down.
Yeah, that was straight into the point and like, but at the same time, I don't see anything wrong with if you're just doing a livery reveal.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Reveal the livery.
Put a picture on Twitter.
Yeah.
Give us the car.
That's why Williams did it well.
Unless you're blocked.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people.
Outsource it to a different page and then I can still see it.
You've got a burner account. Come on.
Absolutely. Well, no, because that's the thing. I think Williams were good because they just livery out straight away, chat with the drivers. Nice, concise little thing. Boom, easy.
They talked a bit about the Golf partnership and what they're doing with that. They talked to the drivers. And they got to the point of the stuff we wanted to know. Whereas I think a lot of people, like for example, the Red Bull, there was like a lot of people felt super disconnected because it was a huge production because they were building up to something quite big and at the same time probably lost the attention of a lot of people because they're like, I'm here for F1, not particularly to hear about your athletes and stuff like that.
Yeah. About this man who does snowboarding talking to me about the car.
Yeah.
I was into that.
I rate it, to be honest with you. I like it. It was, but I hear it. It was just a long time.
It was different. It was just, it was just like, we're impatient, so.
I have no attention span. No,
I have ADHD.
Unfortunately.
It's crippling.
Sure, I think I, no, yeah. It's,
I just realised we haven't actually talked about the livery either. Alfa Romeo.
Alfa Romeo, yeah. How do you,
hot. Hang on.
It's hot.
I like it. I love it. I saw a couple of people complaining because it's like a little bit too basic. And the white, and
no such thing.
I did like the white and red sort of vibe Alfa Romeo of the last two seasons a lot. This is just, it's like a little Ferrari light. Get me?
Red and like Ferrari Zero.
Ferrari Zero, it is. Actually, it's Zero. Nah,
it's beautiful.
I liked it.
I love it.
I'm into it.
Mm-hmm. Again, it's an advertising board, and when you've got a lot of sponsors, especially when you've got a lot of sponsors, you have to chill out with the base design. Mm-hmm. You have to pull it back because if you've got a really busy design and then loads of sponsor logos on it as well, it all just gets lost. You're not going to be able to like discern it. That's why Williams, I think, can get away with having a bit more of a fiddly, complicated design and Haas as well, because they don't have a ton of sponsors. I think when these teams get to a stage where they all have a lot of sponsors, I think all of the liveries will become
They'll clean up quite a bit.
Because they have to, because you lose legibility. You've seen these cars go past, like, it's important.
What would you rate the Alfa Romeo, both of you?
Oh, at least a 9.
At least a 9?
Yeah, man. Like, obviously, I haven't seen it on the real car. So the renders did look like, I don't know if you can, because we've talked a bit in the past about Red Bull clones and this assumption that most teams are going to go in that direction, and the side pods did look,
the little scoopy boys on the front, the underhanging
scoopy
little scoopy boys.
That's
technical.
That's the technical,
I shouldn't have said that out loud. I'm gonna get NDA'd now.
But what do you think the cars are all going to go in that direction? Because I think Shakedown is like in a week, isn't it? A lot of these cars,
a lot of them will, they'll get a bit of a filming day to go out and the 100 kilometers, do a filming day on demo tires. And there'll be a good opportunity to check the car on the track for the first time. But it's really hard to say what people are going to do in terms of philosophy, because year one of the new regs, I don't see anybody copying the zero pods in the short term, but maybe during the long term, there's something actually genuine, which is an advantage, which is not yet locked in for years, but it could be soon. But will we find people copying the Red Bull? Probably.
Yeah,
but it was the same thing that we've seen in the past when you had the green edition Red Bull showing up. It wasn't
green edition.
It wasn't necessarily quick.
No, it's one thing copying; it's another thing understanding. I guess, right?
Yeah,
and everything connects. Like the aero of the front wing affects the side pods, which affects the rear.
You can't
wing.
Just it all go, "Oh yeah, let me just nab Red Bull's front wing."
No, exactly.
You know, completely.
And then on top of the stuff that you see, there's the stuff that you don't see, like how all those things are interacting, like you talked about. And then how they're setting up the car and the suspension, everything else, which there's only a handful of scenarios and options and philosophies you can have now, but that all depends on everything tied in together and everything being conscious together. And that's one of the reasons that we saw Mercedes having such a tough time last year, because they built this whole car around this concept and philosophy.
Yeah.
And it was not particularly slippery, so it was kind of slow. And they had porpoising, then put it into a window where it didn't operate well. And because they'd put all their eggs in the basket of it operating here, it operated very poorly in that new place.
Because I know I've seen in your streams talking about that operating window. And for some teams, it's bigger than others. So it felt like Mercedes last year. They just had this little window that when they nailed it, they could win a race. They could challenge at the front. Lewis could get 5 podiums in a row. Like they could be up there. But that window was so small that if those conditions weren't optimal, then nowhere.
Then exactly. You rock up from the summer break, we're at Belgium, and we're like, oh no, sorry, Mercedes fans. Then you go to high downforce circuits, Zandvoort, Budapest, and even at the end of the season, Mexico, and Abu Dhabi to some extent, were higher downforce circuits, and they went quite well. But if you go back to look at the Monzas, and look at the Bakus and everything else, like, uh-oh.
Well, we should be seeing, Aston Martin have said they will be showing off their actual car. Which comes on Monday. So we've got, what is it? You've got AlphaTauri Saturday. Yeah. They're launching in New York
Fashion
as well.
Week. Fashion Week, fashion brand.
Fashion Week shut
down. Oh, I like
And then, but I mean, testing's, while we've got you here as well, I've got to ask about testing. Obviously, going into the second season of new regulations, you know, we all watch testing, and typically what we see in testing doesn't, apart from who's right at the front,
yes,
the rest doesn't seem to really reflect what actually happens in Bahrain.
Like blowing up all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been like,
you're not going to unblow up
a
week later.
Unbelievable or disastrous, and kind of everything in the middle is like,
But how's that going to go down? Because how long is testing, and how, what are the teams going to be looking to learn, and what's going to be the priorities this season versus, say, last year, where it was a total, like, no one had any idea what they were walking into?
I think, yeah, like you said, people have more awareness of things to look out for. And there's things like in the past year, like porpoising everything, which teams seem to get on top of. It's still a feature. It's definitely still a feature, and it impacts how you set up the car, where you run the car, and where you've put development into the car in the off season. But at the same time, we've got new front tires, which was talked about quite early on in the season.
Just front tires?
Yeah, just, I believe, just front tires. So they're slightly, they should provide slightly more front end than the other ones, whereas the other ones tend to saturate and wash out, whereas these will, should provide more front grip relative to the rear. And that's the kind of thing that you can't just set up out of the car because of the way that tire works. You can't just add front grip in a specific spot. That really comes down to how the tire works. Did they hit the mark with that tire? I don't know. But that'll be something the teams are definitely will be spending some time understanding. How do the cars, the front tires, is there camber sensitivity? Usually the pressures, you don't have a whole lot of scope on those because they're quite conservative and high anyway.
Oh, yeah, because they enforced them. Do you remember like Baku when Max and Lance both had tire blowouts? They raised or lowered the pressures, didn't they?
They probably will have increased them, I think. Yeah, usually that you're getting too much deflection and stress in the tires. So they're if you put more pressure in it, they're not deflecting as much. But that's one thing. But what winter testing will look like, we've got this year, we've only got Bahrain. Mm-hmm. We've got 3 days of testing. Probably what you'll have is the driver splitting days across every day so that you get a little bit each time.
Yep.
And if you lose people, you will always lose mileage in testing due to reliability faults. It's the nature of a game. You've got new cars, you've got people changing stuff. The first couple of days,
that's the time for things to go wrong.
Exactly. Yeah, but the race is next week after in Bahrain. Yeah. So it's like,
not got long.
Yeah. But the good thing is these cars are an evolution of last year. Mm-hmm. You don't have, you know, radical new designs. I don't think you'll see anything super new and radical. People will be running relatively tried and true stuff and just optimizing what they had last year. The first day, probably all about reliability and getting through, making sure stuff works, brakes, engines, everything like that. Making sure the aerodynamic surfaces are working. The wings aren't, you know, detaching or stalling. So you're generating downforce on the wings that you expect to do. And then
you definitely
slowly
don't want your wings detaching.
No, well,
doesn't sound ideal.
Physically detaching from the car, and also the aerodynamics, like the flow structure detaching. You'll see lots of flow vis, you know, the fluorescent paint.
Yeah.
You'll see a lot of that the first couple of days. And then you're going to get into running higher fuel runs, checking the performance of the tire over long runs, and then mixing in some low fuel runs towards the end of testing. The glory runs, we call them. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'll see some teams pulling all the fuel out and going for some fast laps on the
Ferrari. Love option. To do that. Ferrari always do that.
But that's so many teams, like, they love to keep their cards not even close to, like, within their rib cage.
Yeah.
They're like, don't want to give anything away.
The cards yet. They don't even have any.
If you can do like bingo for words that are going to be used at testing, sandbagging has to be number one.
Sandbagging.
But I think another thing is,
does that actually go on, by the way?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. But it's not so much deliberate. Like, I don't, from my experience, it wasn't like, let's not tell people how quick we are. It's, you know, most of the time you can get more effectiveness out of runs by having more fuel in the car and doing more stuff. So how you structure your run plan. But I think one thing that you see catch teams out, and I've seen it several times, is the cars, if you take the extremes, 110 kilos of fuel in the car versus 5 kilos in the car. Start of a race, qualifying run. The cars do behave differently. Mm. And the same is also true when you go from, like, let's say practice, you're running, you know, somewhere between 20 and 50 kilos, to qualifying down to 5-8 kilos for a single run. The handling of the car does change, and never mind just the balance, but there's other characteristics that can pop up as soon as you pull that much fuel out of the car and you're getting that much more grip and going that much faster through the corners. You'll have small things changing. You can have wheel hopping, you know, when you hear people talk about that now and then. You can see tires unloading, you know, more extreme, getting strange locks in places.
Yeah. Mm.
So there are benefits to running everything and showing your hand to some extent.
Yeah.
You'll have people turning their engine down. That's going to be definitely on the bingo card detuned engines for testing and practice. But,
because reliability is the reliability upgrades as well that teams would have bought potentially, because you can't bring performance upgrades, but you can bring reliability. Yeah,
Ferrari found 100 horsepower in the off season. No, wait. No,
fuel flow sensors again.
It's not. That never happened.
No, sorry, that never happened.
You just get De Vries' lawyer to pay for that, and that goes away too.
Okay, 50% of that.
No, but Ferrari have said, and it seems like at the end of last season that one of two things happened: either the regulation change at the summer break, the floor. Maybe they fell foul of that and they had to lose some performance there because they were kind of skirting around that gray area. Mm-hmm. Hats off to them. Or engine reliability, and they did have to turn the engine down. So there's, if you fix reliability and you can run the engine optimally, that's allowed in terms of development.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know if you'd agree with this, I feel like we'll learn more from testing this year relative to actual car performance than we did last year. Because last year it seemed to be all over the place.
There was so much experimentation.
Like Alpine were nowhere. Yeah. I remember McLaren had their issues. Yeah. I just feel like there was a lot more unknowns, potential for unforeseen issues last year, whereas you've had a whole season of running these fundamental same cars. And raising the, was it 10 mil or 50
the floor
mil
edges,
on the floors or whatever?
1 mil on the floor edges for the...
Is that going to make a massive difference in terms of understanding of these cars, do you think?
No, I think it's something they'll get to grips with pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And that people know what to look for, and there's things and tools they've developed to help understand those things better. Mm-hmm. They'll get on top of it more quickly this year. Will it impact them? Absolutely. But it's not going to take them till race 7 this year.
No, not like last year. I'm excited for testing, man. It's gonna be,
Not. I can't get excited.
What do you
about
mean?
Testing.
That's your first thing that you jump on. I can actually look at some.
Look at the real as well.
I'm excited about testing to look at it, but with my data hat on, I'm not certain that we will get anything particularly more useful than the past. Like maybe yes, like people will be closer to where they're going to be, but at the same time, the context is everything. Whereas in a race weekend, you have to play your cards. You have to show everything. It's clear what the run plans are roughly, especially when you see qualifying in a race session. Mm. Free practice results, long runs in FP2. I can't tell you much about the cars because they might not have the same problems on Sunday. So it's the same thing going from testing to the race the next weekend at the same track. It'll be interesting to see where the pecking order at the end of testing compared to points, qualifying pace on the Grand Prix.
It will.
I don't know.
You ain't got the answers.
No, I don't.
And if anyone should, it's you. So.
And if anybody says they do,
yeah,
you know what to tell them.
Liars.
A liar, an actress. God, you fuck off.
Big up Louis Vuitton. Right, should we wrap the pod up with our little section we do at the end now?
We shall indeed.
Is this new?
It's new since you were on last.
It is indeed.
Yeah.
This is Equal Machinery, ladies and gentlemen. This is where we are all allocated, each a driver, that we believe or we have to argue would win in Equal Machinery in their prime. So all of us will get allocated a driver and we have to then argue in the space of a minute.
You don't get to choose your driver.
You don't get to choose. You don't get to choose.
So you might be having to play devil's advocate to your actual beliefs and feelings.
Have you had anybody throw their driver under the bridge?
Under the bus? We've had some varying degrees of impressive and concerning performances.
Tom ran out of time.
That's happened before.
That was good.
I'm not very good at politicking, and that's what it is. This is team principle. The driver's offered to give you a bag to get him in that seat, and you're trying to tell the team owners, like, all right, yeah, come on, we got to get...
this guy.
Well, we talked about testing, and obviously it will be the first time we see these cars on track, but also it'll be the first time we see a bunch of drivers. So in this head-to-head, we're going to be comparing the rookies. I have been assigned Nick De Vries. Niren has been assigned Oscar Piastri.
Hi, my brother. Brother
Logan, baby. Logan Sargent for you, Blake.
Okay.
So we all have to, we've got a minute each I'm just going to get my timer up to argue as to
I've
why.
I've actually got some notes on this guy.
Yes.
Yeah. Really? You literally. What? You've actually got notes?
Hell yeah. But I'm not just going to.
As he pulled this, you've predicted that
I've already done some discussing about Logan Sargent and other.
I suppose,
other
yeah, I think fresh in the mind,
I
isn't
think
it?
This is the first time anyone's come to this segment with actual. Research.
Well, you can't disappoint now, man.
No, I
man didn't even know who Oscar Piastri was, really. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So,
well, I will start this time because I haven't started for a while. Okay, as to why cool. I think Nick De Vries is currently a stronger package than Ooh. Piastri and Sargent. Well, first of all, he's the one who's actually experienced F1 machinery, has got into the points in that Williams jumped in. Formula E champion, right on the chuff of Alex Albon when it was back in Formula 2 as well. He was very close. If things had panned out slightly differently, he'd have been an established F1 driver by now, no doubt in my mind whatsoever. He's also very short, which helps from a weight kind yeah. of, you know, center of gravity. You can balance the car all you like, but center of gravity is important.
Wouldn't have that, Nick.
Nick De Vries has done it. He's proven it, okay? He's been out here. He's done bits. Nick De Vries. 40 seconds. Wow, 20 seconds left. He is... Seems like a really nice bloke.
Debt free.
Not
getting sued anymore.
Yuki Tsunoda, he's up against a teammate who's growing and developing, and he's going to be in an AlphaTauri. It's going to be a much better package than last year. Listen, they're doing bits. They're fine. That's a minute.
You're selling me. I'm buying most of those points.
Took me out a little.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. How dare you?
To be
he's a small man.
Okay, lower center of gravity. Because they adjust the car weight to account for the driver, correct?
Total mass of the car.
Yeah.
Because you have a minimum weight.
But center of gravity of that mass is surely a factor, right?
Yeah, but I think in terms of the absolute value, in terms of the driver, will be on the lower end of sensitivity, like not first order. But
compared to Esteban Ocon's head's right up here, yeah. George Russell's head's right up here, compared to, you know, the shorter drivers.
You're probably a couple of meters in terms of vertical CFG height. I could buy that. But will that, I think, for example, the driver skill and talent alone will far outweigh any.
You said you can buy it, so I'm taking that.
Also, Tsunoda's smaller, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, exactly. Center of gravity height.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure De Vries is shorter than Logan and Oscar.
Oh, yeah.
And this is equal machinery.
All right.
Equal machinery. Lower center of gravity than both of them.
Okay. But you did mention machinery specific attributes.
What do you mean?
You talked about the AlphaTauri car.
Ah, true.
Equal machinery.
You meant to ignore that.
Okay.
Are you ready, Niren?
Not particularly, to be honest with you.
I believe in you.
Argue the merits of Oscar Piastri.
Right, let's have it.
This got to be the easiest sell, honestly.
Yeah,
I think it is. Go on.
Go.
Ridiculous junior career. All right, that's all I need to say.
Yeah,
I'm done. It's a wrap.
I'll take it.
There's barely anyone that could have competed with this guy throughout the entirety of his junior career. One in F4, one in F3, one in F2 as a rookie, I believe, in a Prema car, which, yes, sure, you know, the Prema is a decent car, but not everyone jumps in that. Mick Schumacher jumped in that and didn't win a championship, didn't even come close in his first season in F2. Oscar Piastri wins literally everything that he's in. Quite literally, two teams had a war against each other for his signature, yeah? McLaren and Alpine were both going after him. Alpine thought they'd locked him down. McLaren swooped out of nowhere, grabbed him from under that. I'm telling you now, Oscar Piastri and Lando is one of the most exciting driver partnerships in Formula 1 as we speak. Yeah, this guy, I don't even need to really finish the time, because just the fact that he's just won every junior championship that he's been in is pretty much enough as a rookie. What more can you do?
I think that's super tough to argue with, honestly. That has been super impressive, seeing the one and done, you know, straight in ace.
That is crazy. Ace. It's like a Stoffel van Dorn, isn't it?
But
he's set such a high bar now. That's the thing. He's set a really high bar.
No, exactly. And what's the last time?
Expectation.
When's the last time we saw a one and done? Was it Russell and Leclerc were one and dones? GP3, GP2, back to backs.
I think so.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
Lando didn't, but he was up in the mix with.
He was in the same championship.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, I think that's not. I don't think there's too many questions that Lando is excellent. In a faster car, he will be banging wheels with the rest of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm genuinely gassed to see Piastri this year.
So am I.
Because
man.
I just don't... Yeah, with that year out, it's very difficult. Like, it feels like...
Exactly.
What's that gonna?
Where's Nick? Nick had so many opportunities to drive a car and a Grand Prix weekend.
Yeah. But anyway, we're getting carried away. So Logan Sargeant.
So my,
Blake, go.
Yeah. You got a minute.
So my brother from America, Logan Sargeant, and I have to be honest, I didn't know much about his career because I do not follow F3 and F2 very closely. I get consumed by all the Formula One data. But going back, I was looking at his career and I was like, I'm not that enthused right now. But then I look back in 2020, he finished third and just 4 points behind Piastri, who we are rating and touting as a top talent. I think Piastri has earned that spot. But Sargeant, not too bad. Now, the lower formulas can be a complete crapshoot depending on the engines. There's a lot there. And you don't ever have the best driver. Best driver in a shit car will not win. It's done. So there's a lot of variables. Maybe he didn't get the best deck dealt, but...
his notes have gone. And no, he's got 15 seconds.
Right, 2021, F3 was not great. And then F2 last year was not good.
It was not good?
No, it wasn't. Last year, F2 was not good.
I thought it was all right.
Rookie of the year. You're meant to be arguing his merits.
No, no, I'm too realistic. I can't lie to anybody. But
meant to be delusional.
No, but I think he could do very well. It's going to be very interesting seeing him up against Alex Albon, who I think, if anybody doesn't rate him, I don't get it, because I think Alex is a super strong driver. So
he said it, not me.
Yeah, exactly.
Tomo paid me to say that. I think Alex is solid. So
payment.
So if there is, I think he will have to learn very quickly.
So who's
good
who's
point about the by the way, just the closeness to Piastri.
Yeah,
no, that's,
he was leading that championship before the final race. Logan was ahead of Piastri.
Yeah, no,
it's Magello.
What team was he at? I know, because he was at a shitter for the second. He was at a shitter. I think he was like,
it went Shrews. Yeah, I think he was Prima that first year. I could be wrong.
Oh, so 2020 was Prima.
Him and Piastri were teammates.
Yeah,
so he showed in the best car.
He was up there with Porsche.
Yeah. Porsche was 3 points behind.
Yeah.
Sargeant was 4.
It went down to the finale, and I think Logan got punted into the second corner or something.
But to be fair, last year in F2, Drugovic dominated the whole thing. Then, Porsche, Lawson, and Sargeant were all within
There's so much nuance to these results. This is the thing.
And it's F2. F2 results are not fair. You have to have a great season, you have to have no reliability issues, and you have to be in the team that is good.
I'm fucking at the amount of times Porsche broke down last year as well. Like, it should have actually been a title fight. I think Logan, to be honest,
I think he's got a shot. I think he's got a serious shot, but...
The nuance to these results is what you've kind of got to look through when you're looking at these drivers.
Yeah, exactly. And if I look at those results, I look back at De Vries in the past, and like, yes, he's got the FE championships, but his early formula years, I can't tell that much. Whereas you see Piastri, three aces in a row, first year in each series, and you're like, because we're saying
in their prime, and their prime is the I think you've got to say all three are probably like they're within their as prime well, as they the can
best,
get right now.
They're the best that they have been.
Yeah, because
yet
they're youngsters, right?
Yeah.
Especially Logan and Oscar. So like right now. Because obviously De Vries does have a lot more experience. He's raced in other categories. I think there's a lot of value in that makes you a more well-rounded driver.
Of course,
generally, he's had much more experience in F1 machinery than these two as well in terms of testing over the years.
Sure.
He's been part of Mercedes for a while now. I would say, honestly, I think right now, the strongest of the three, if you chuck him in an F1 car in equal machinery in a race, would be De Vries. Because of the experience.
Right now. Yeah.
I think the potential for the other two is higher, especially Oscar.
Yeah.
But he's not driven in anger yet.
Yeah. I think that's a fair assessment. Right now, if you take him, throw him into a Grand Prix weekend, the same machinery, I think De Vries will knock it out. Six races time, whereas Logan, I think Piastri's going to probably... I expect that he'll surpass that based on his previous recent results.
Yeah.
And compared to the people he's gone up against, who I think we all... think that we rate.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, he's, yeah.
It's not even so much like a pace issue. Like, I think Piastri and Sargent's pace were, but I just, Lando's talked about this. I know that, you know, his very first race in Australia, he was like, bag of nerves, because it's like, you're not just driving for yourself. You've got to be aware of everyone else who's around.
Yeah.
Like, that's the racing side of it. It's not just hot lapping anymore. Yeah. It's actually racing wheel to wheel with people.
Thousands,
and that's going to take time.
Yeah.
That's
going to
take time.
Well, maybe just, you know, tiny little bit of map darkness that's like not there.
So. I would say right now, I'd say De Vries out of them three.
That's because that's who you dealt yourself as De Vries.
And I'll convince myself, you know?
Yeah, you actually managed to convince yourself there. I am going to stick with that sort of line of reasoning, in the sense of the person that I spoke about is the person that I believe. I'm a romantic, yeah? If I think you've got the max amount of raw talent, for me, that's all that matters. We don't care about the rest of it. So I'm going with Oscar.
Fair.
What about you, Blake? Are you sticking with the boy?
Because Oscar's junior career. This is Leclerc, Russell level.
I'm romantic fully. Like you about that. Yeah. And yes, we do acknowledge it has to be the perfect storm. Right team, right car, minimal reliability issues and everything else.
Experience as well is a massive thing.
Yeah, I think Piastri's probably the most exciting long-term prospect of the three.
Which makes it all the more tragic that Alpine managed to fumble.
Fumble the last
day. It's unforgivable.
But like this, that could be the difference the next season in the Constructors' Championship for that team.
Imagine like 5 years from now. Just imagine like a timeline where Piastri does deliver on all this potential and helps turn McLaren into this title-winning team.
Yeah.
And Alpine, you just think like this could honestly... Like
Alpine, please.
It could look so bad.
There was someone before Ocon, I guess.
Mm.
Technically, he was kind of fumbled by Mercedes, wasn't he?
Yeah.
It was.
Someone before Joe.
When Joe fumbled with Alpine. Well. Yeah, there was, wasn't there?
There was some junior driver for Alpine or Renault, but I can't remember who it was.
Because I know Jack Doohan went the other way around.
Yeah. But yeah, please.
Not Super Max. All right, mate. Should we wrap it there? That was fun.
Yes, that was good.
That was a blast, man.
Good stuff.
You got me out of my comfort zone a little bit, talking about liveries and colors and the graphic design.
Well, we had to do that.
It is cool, and it's genuinely something that in the past I'd been too like zeroed in on what I was doing that I didn't even look at the cars that we were revealing, because it was like we're busy doing sim work. But it's really nice being able, like you're saying, going back from that, taking a step back, and be able to enjoy the sport just like everybody else for the first time in 10 years.
If the car doesn't look like nice and the sponsors don't get good legibility, you don't get paid.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, working at a team.
Well,
that's what pays the bills.
Yeah.
The sponsors.
Yeah.
So,
it is indeed.
Performance attracts sponsors.
It does. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's full circle, man. Full circle.
Yeah, man, it's a cycle. It's never
ended. Everything cycling.
Beauty attracts sponsors. All right, man. Well, it was fun. Thank you all for coming. Appreciate you taking the time to listen, watch wherever you are in the world. Don't forget to drop a like if you're on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Subscribe as well.
Should they leave an excellent review, 5 stars?
I think they should.
I think they should as well.
That's a fascinatingly wonderful idea.
I have, actually.
Do it.
What a man. Yeah, 5-star rating on Spotify. Give us a good review on Amazon if you're watching over there.
Yeah. Where else? Maybe eBay as well. I don't really trust eBay quite like I do Amazon.
Yeah, no, I do as well. But
you know, you don't know if you get something used.
Yeah, if you're listening on Etsy right now as well, then don't forget to give us a review. Yeah, if you're watching on your Bosch smart fridge. Have you seen us?
Yes! Fridges have screens on them.
You sat there filling up your glass of water and the water's overflowing because you're like, hold on.
I just love this insight.
Staring into my soul right now.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance.
As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.